Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Robert Swarwood Podcast. Today I am joined by author Ben White, who is the editor and publisher of Nanoism.com, which is Twitter-sized fiction. He also runs Midnight Stories, which is a every day on Twitter. He posts a new story at midnight. I've known Ben for several years. Ben, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm all right. Let's talk about Nanoism. Well, first of all, let's actually go back. Well, yeah, let's talk about Nanoism, and let's talk about how it even began for you. Like, what about, you know, stories that are 140 characters? And I guess let's explain for people who aren't aware. Well, you want to tell us what Twitter fiction is?
Yeah. So, I mean, there were kind of two types that developed out of Twitter back maybe about 4 years ago. At first, there were these kind of long form, you know, every single tweet is part of a longer story. It's very disjointed. And then some guys, not myself, but kind of figured out you could have a microfiction story so short that it actually would fit inside of a tweet. And so back around New Year's of 2009 is when I first started writing these. At that point, I think the one person who really had a good following was a guy named Arjun Basu, who had been writing exactly 140 character stories at a time. And I did it just 140 or less to be flexible. And so it's kind of blown up and kind of has waxes and wanes in terms of how many people on Twitter are actually writing these things, but it's a lot of fun. So
now Twitter's been around for how many years now? Two or three?
Twitter itself, I think, has been around for like five or six, I think, but it's really blown up a lot in the past couple.
Well, yeah,
I started writing these, I guess, 3.5 years ago.
Okay. And do you see a decline in the enthusiasm of Twitter fiction?
You know, it's kind of funny. I think if I did see one, it'd be partially for people like myself who've been kind of at it for a long time. I think whenever somebody new comes across the idea, they get really energized by it. And I'll have people who submit to Nanoism who have come to it late, but then submit regularly every week, week in and week out for months. And then eventually they stop too, usually. And there are a handful that continue to do it years and years later. But I feel like it's one of those concepts that really, when you first discover it, is extremely energizing, and it makes you want to write them, like thousands of them by the day. And then at some point you say, okay, now the things I want to say, it might take longer than 140 characters.
Yeah, the way that you and I met was I wrote a silly essay a couple years ago about hint fiction, and that's kind of how you and I sort of started talking about like these really short stories. And you had been doing Nanoism, I believe, that was in April of 2009. When did you start Nanoism?
Like 2 months prior to that.
Okay, so 2 months prior to that. And before that, were you doing Midnight Stories? Which came first, Midnight Stories or Nanoism?
Midnight Stories came first, and I basically been writing them for a couple months and decided that I had really actually gotten a lot out of it as a writer, and I thought it was a great kind of modality to keep yourself honest and keep writing every day, even when your days are busy. And so to kind of promote that and to pass it forward, I decided to create Nanoism, which at the time I think was the first, other than Thaumatrope, which was a science fiction-based. That was the very first Twitter zine. Mine was probably the second Twitter zine and the only one that actually accepted, you know, non-genre stories. And so I kind of created it to fill that void. I made it a paying market so people would take it a little bit more seriously. And so I've written probably only like, you know, 60 or 80 Twitter fiction stories before I actually decided to create Nanoism. And then your contest came out a couple months into it and kind of actually blew up the whole idea of short stories. I think it actually helped my site out a lot because people were 25 words and 240 characters are actually, in many ways, usually the same, roughly.
When I do get asked, because a lot of people contact me asking where they can send hint fiction, or I get asked, is there going to be another hint fiction anthology? And no, currently there is not any planned, which we can talk more about the reason for that later. But, you know, I always point them in your direction. I always say, you know, out of all the Twitter fiction stuff, I think Nanoism actually does really strong quality. And that's because I know, you know, you and I have talked, and I know that you put a lot of work into the stories that you pick, the stories that you publish.
It is actually a surprising amount of work given how short they are. But it's funny because what will happen is that the main difference between hint fiction and, you know, Twitter fiction, or at least the stories that I publish, is that I don't use titles. There are some of these Twitter accounts that kind of break them up into two tweets. And so the first tweet will have the author bio and a title. The second one will be the story. But for me, I've gone titleless, which in some ways, you know, kind of hinders some of the capacity for how much story you can tell. But so I often get a lot of submissions that have titles, and I'm pretty sure there are people who have either read the other sites or read Hint Fiction and want to submit those stories that have a title. And I always tell them, you know, hey, great story, but I don't use the title. So, you know, it has to stand without it.
Now, do you think a story with a title, what do you think is harder to write? A nanofiction, or a, you know, a nanofiction story where you don't have the opportunity to use a title? Because really, a title kind of gives that extra layer to the story. Or do you think, you know, it's hard to actually, you know, write? Because I guess with a – see, I don't want to make it sound like one is better than the other, because they're not. I mean, they're different. And I think you have to approach them differently too. But at the same time, I feel that one might be easier for a writer than the other. And, you know, for another writer, it might be opposite.
Yeah, I think it's kind of both. Because what I'll see – this is true of my own stories too – is that when I'll see someone write a story and you see the title – and this is also true for a lot of Hint Fiction stories that you would get – that some titles were awesome and they added a whole different layer to the story. The story was not the same with without the title. And I actually wrote a post about this in my blog years ago. But then there are other stories people write, and the title is literally just an explanation. It's like, you know, the meeting or something like that. And you're like, this title adds absolutely nothing. Right. It actually almost detracts because it serves no purpose. And when you only have 20 words, if you're wasting four of them, then you just wasted, you know, 1/4 of your word count. And so I think everyone's a little bit different about that.
And I think what happens is that those type of titles, it's clear that the writer doesn't really understand what they're doing, if that makes sense, you know, because the title, it's so much more important than a regular short story or a novel, because it really becomes half of the story.
It does.
And so to kind of make it, you know, just redundant and say, you know, like you said, the meeting, and then it's a story about a meeting, that there's nothing there. I mean, there's no real purpose. But yeah, I mean, I've found too in the past, when I had read, you know, for the Hint Fiction Anthology, and then when we had the various contests, you know, a title really made or break, or it would make or break a story. You know, a story might be really, but the story itself might be great, but the title, you look at it and be like, why did they, you know, why did they title it that? Or, you know, if it had a better title, it could have, you know, the story could have been better. And for the anthology, it was one of those things that, you know, if I saw a lot of potential in the story itself, I would work with the author. But for the contest, you kind of had to take them as is.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't say like, oh, this story could be great if they just changed this word, or if they added, you know, these two words to this title, or, you know, they did whatever. I couldn't do that. You know, I had to do them as is. And what I found was last year when we had it with Joyce Carol Oates, I found a disturbing trend that the stories were becoming almost formulaic. And I don't know, I've had conversations with, various authors about this. Michael Martone was one where we kind of really had a very in-depth conversation about it. And it almost seems that now, before Hint Fiction was something kind of new, no one really knew what it was. But then when the Hint Fiction Anthology came out, people saw what the genre was. They kind of saw, you know, what they could do with it. And that pretty much created a limit, you know, before people were thinking outside the box. Now they kind of saw what it was, and they kind of saw, oh, okay, I can do it this way. And yeah, it became kind of a formulaic type of process. And so I just kind of wanted to, that's why I didn't have a contest this past year. I just felt like right now I just kind of want to take a breather from it. I mean, I might have them in the future, but right now it just kind of seems like, well, what more can be done that hasn't already been done? I mean, granted, you only have, you know, 140 characters, you have 25 words, but I would like to think that there is more that can be done, but I don't know. What do you think?
No, I mean, I kind of agree, which is one of the reasons why I switched the publication schedule for Nanoism from 3 times a week to 1 time a week, because at the end of the day, you know, there are only so many tropes that exist out there, only so many, you know, archetypal stories. And so if I have a library of 500 stories that we've published, which is what we did last Friday, if you wanted to, you could read all 500 in a day, and you would see what trends there were, how people got the right effect they're looking for, and you can copy that. To mention the fact that the easiest story you're going to get is a story that has an ending built in, like a murder, you know. And so I get so many, you know, torture, rapist, murder, vengeful husband, ex-girlfriend kind of stories that hit me like literally, you know, day by day.
And that's something,
you know, it's so many.
And that's something you and I had talked about before. Actually, I think you did done a blog post years ago, and I had done a blog post, I think, in response to your blog post. This is, I think, when I was reading for the anthology originally. Like maybe half of the stories that were submitted had to do with some kind of murder, death, you know, like it was something where I guess writers felt that because they had so few words, they had to be as shocking as possible. And what's the most shocking thing but murder? Although, quite honestly, the fact that there's just so many stories of murder, it really loses its shock appeal. And I don't know. I remember, you know, like I said, you and I had talked about that. I mean, so you're still seeing a lot more.
I mean, it's like for the most shocking thing I see a lot that comes up frequently in a slush recently has been like the kidnapped woman or child story. So it's from the perspective of the kidnapper. And at first you're not sure what's happening and you're like, oh my God, he kidnapped a child. And right, so this is a horrible act that in real life you'd be disgusted by. But in my slush, it's like once a week minimum. And I published the very first one I saw. I was like, wow, I didn't see that coming at all. That was really left a creepy impression in my mind. So I published it. And now, you know, literally I have, you know, just a thing. I expect to see that every week.
You know, I watched this movie last night called Being Flynn, which is based on a memoir called Another Bullshit Night in Suck City. It's a memoir by Nick Flynn. And it was published by W.W. Norton. And I remember getting an email, God, was it maybe a year or two ago, that there was going to be a copy of Hint Fiction along with other Norton titles used, I guess, in the background at the Housing Works bookstore. And what basically happens at the end of the movie, they're in a bookstore and, you know, there's books all over the place. And so I'm watching this, trying to keep an eye out. And of course I didn't see it, but I, for some reason, I don't even know why, I like Googled, somehow I ended up on Wikipedia. And so I was curious and I was saying, you know, I wonder if Hint Fiction has a Wikipedia entry. I mean, I never added it or anything. So I searched on Wikipedia for Hint Fiction and I found this writer. And this writer claims that they had work in the Hint Fiction anthology. But this writer never had work in the Hint Fiction anthology. And so I looked at this and I'm like, what the hell is this? And the name looked familiar. So I did a quick search, and it turns out that this writer was a runner-up in a Hint Fiction contest, the last one, the one by that was judged by Joyce Carol Oates. Okay? So I was like, what the hell?
That's so weird.
And I mean, is it really worth contacting this person? I mean, it's very clear that I guess they're updating their own Wikipedia page, but I don't know. It's just the weirdest thing. And then they had a bunch of other like awards this person won, and they had other, you know, other publications. And it's kind of, it's like, well, how, you know, how many of these are real? How many of these are just made up? Like, how are you just going to add yourself to some kind of anthology that you're not a part of?
It's also funny because what I'll find in terms of, you know, cause I can check out when people link back to the site is that, not to belittle my own publication or anything, but it is kind of amusing when people have these kind of like, you know, write one, sub one type personal, you know, contests where they really want to publish it a lot and they're writing a lot. And you see people who just like are partially writing these small stories because they're hoping that if they write enough of them, they get them published in the variety of venues that exist, that they can be like, yes, I was accepted and published, you know, this month. I hit my quota of stories that I wanted to be accepted. And there's nothing wrong with that per se, but it's a little bit funny when you have somebody who literally is submitting these short stories, basically just kind of doing it every, I let them do one a week. So they submit every week, week in and week out, because they really want to have the luck to get one in so they can say, hey, I published this month, checkbox, you know, checked, mission accomplished. And it's like, it's very obvious because those are the people who typically will submit every week for, you know, a year before I actually take one, because they don't actually follow. Well, they just don't follow the form, basically. You know, they get lucky at some point. I keep an open mind, but it's always amusing because I have several routine submitters who just every week submit, and every week I'm like, yeah, thanks, but no.
Now let me ask you this: every writer's different, obviously. So it's going to take each writer a different length of time to write a story so short. I know for myself, you know, depending on the story, it's, you know, hours, you know, despite the fact it's like a 17-word story, a 20-word story. Obviously, I don't sit down for hours to do it, but I, you know, I come back to it again and again. What's the longest you've ever spent on any of your stories?
So back when I was still a medical student and not not working in the hospital, I had the luxury of kind of having a backlog before I published. I would write them kind of usually in a spurt, and then I would sit on them for a while before I published them. And so I would sometimes look at a story every day for a month before it actually came time to publish it, and I would probably make changes and tweaks multiple times. Those are some of my favorite ones, the ones that I've been able to kind of just – so you write it and you say, this is great. And you come back 4 days later like, no, this is crap actually. Hold on.
And is it clear to you when you get a story how much work has actually been put into it? Because, I mean, I'll admit, sometimes, you know, just the words come together and you write them down and that's it. There's really not much more work that needs to be done. And then there are other times where you can kind of tell that this person, you know, they spent a lot of time despite the length, you know, the short length of the story.
Yeah, I feel like for some authors, I can kind of, especially if they submit more often, I can kind of get a feel for which ones are their, like, you know, more thoughtful efforts. But it's kind of hard just on a one-shot basis, because some people are kind of writing more of a genre type story. So the prose is not necessarily that interesting, but they're trying to capture a really cool idea. And for all you know, that came together, you know, lightning bolt fast. They just had the idea, they wrote it down, great. Other people write these stories that aren't really stories, really just sentences that are nice. And I feel like those people sometimes actually are working really hard on it. It just doesn't really speak to me personally. But, you know, they clearly worked on the sound and the cadence. And so I get the impression that they're working pretty hard on it.
Yeah, and that brings up a really good point that the stories that we do, they are, despite the fact they're so short, they're complete stories. They're not, you know, and this is one of the things I constantly say, that a hidden fiction story is not like a first line. It's not a random sentence plucked from a larger piece of work. It's, you know, it stands by itself. And I always return to that Hemingway story, the For Sale, Baby Shoes Never Worn. That is what it is. You know, it's not taken from a longer story. You know, it's not the first line of a story. I mean, it is the story. And I don't know about you, but I mean, when I was really into hint fiction and was really reading the stories, that was the thing that really stuck out to me. I'd ask myself, you know, does this stand by itself? Is this a story, or is this just a part of a story?
Yeah, and I've a couple times I've actually, maybe more than a couple, I definitely published some nanoisms that are probably not stories. But what was there was compelling enough for me that week to go ahead and publish it. And then a lot of my midnight stories definitely, you know, depending on the week, don't qualify as true stories. That's, you know, my choice. I have to do it. I do it every night. So not every night works out to the point where it's really a good standalone story. But it's funny, I'll get people submitting to Nanoism and they'll say, hey, this is part of my novel in progress. This is part of my, and like literally they tell me that this is not a story.
Do you immediately reject them?
Someone said, tell me it was this is the introductory paragraph of my novel in progress titled whatever.
And then
I was like,
that
really?
Is that an automatic rejection?
No, I read it. I mean, because to a certain extent, all I can say is that if I read this sentence and it feels like a good story in one sentence, then chances are the novel's going to be really crappy, right? So they're able to capture the whole story in one sentence and they go on for 400 pages and they have a problem. But I'll still publish it if it's good.
There was a story that I read in a Best American Short Stories years and years ago. I forget who it was by. I think it was a story by Nathaniel Bellows. And I don't really remember much of the story, but I remember there was a part in it where it was this writer who was working years and years and years on a novel. And it was like over 1,000 words long, or I'm sorry, 1,000 pages long. And at some point, I think something happened in the writer's life, or for some reason, the writer started taking out parts and cutting it back and cutting it back and cutting it back. And it ended up getting down to like a haiku, where from a 1,000-page novel, he was able to kind of just winnow it down to a haiku. And, you know, that was it. And, you know, that, like I said, that kind of goes along with what you just said. You know, my personal belief is a story should be as long as it needs to be. So if it has to be 135 characters, then so be it.
It's funny, too, because so most of the flash fiction that I've published in the past several years, almost all of it has at some point come from something I posted on Twitter. But the funny thing is, my favorite Twitter stories are almost never the ones that actually become the best flash fiction stories, because they were suited for Twitter. They were suited for that length. When I try to blow them up, I'm just padding them, really. You know, I mean, it sounds better, it takes longer to read, but really the impact is no different. The ones that made the best flash fiction stories are usually the ones that were not good Twitter stories. There was something about them I liked, but they didn't really function that effectively on 140 characters.
Along with Twitter fiction, you also do, how do I want to call it? I guess it's Craigslist fiction.
Yeah, right? Craigslist fiction.
How did that come about?
So that came about, actually, it was really funny. I got an email from a buddy of mine, because he was trying to, you know, sublet an apartment in New York, and basically someone had forwarded him a funny ad that they had seen while trying to, like, browse Craigslist ads. And it was one of those, like, kind of blatantly honest things, talking about this person and why they're looking for a roommate and what they wanted in a roommate. And I just kind of, a little light bulb went on. I was like, you know, people are telling, honestly, they're telling stories on Craigslist, you know, by accident. But people, especially in the personal ads, but even regular ads, are just telling way too much information, really. You know, they're telling true stories about themselves. And I was like, well, that's a really compelling medium. You know, we can take something that's out there, like Craigslist, and basically, you know, tweak a few things, but basically keeping the form of an ad, tell a story that is, like, intrinsically real. You know, it's not a true story, factually true, but it is capturing basically, a, you know, an everyday truth. And it's kind of fun to hijack a medium like that. So I wrote my first one, I think, called LMA, and that had been from a tweet that I had written. And then I blew up a couple more that went into – one went to staccato fiction, and one went in, a couple went into Pank. It was a lot of fun. I really, and it's honestly, my favorite things I've ever written, actually, were some of those. I think one of my favorites was probably the one I put in Matchbook, was about a little girl asking to babysit, you know, for money. But obviously that wasn't really the story. That was just the context of the ad. I don't know. It's just something that was kind of fun. I still write those, actually. I always wanted to kind of create a collection of those as well, but, you know, time.
What about Midnight Stories? You ever think you might collect some of those? Because, I mean, you've written over 1,000 Midnight Stories.
Yeah, it's been one a day, literally every day, for 3.5 years. So I have like an ongoing collection that I keep adding to and whittling down, because when I've thought about putting together a collection, I've always kind of debated as to the correct number. Because, yeah, you could collect, like, 500 million of these things, right? But then, like, is that really a collection or just a, like, a compilation, really, you know? So I've always wanted to do a collection, and I've always thought maybe about juxtaposing some of the tweets with the stories that came from those tweets, you know, the longer versions, the shorter versions, and seeing how, in some cases, you know, Twitter fiction is like a writing journal. You know, it's a place, it's that napkin next to your nightstand where you can write your ideas down and see how those become, you know, longer stories when appropriate. I've always kind of wanted to do that. I've kind of debated as to, like, you know, 100 stories, 150, 200. But the problem is, when I've written like 1,000, and there's different moods to all of them. Some are more plots, some are more, you know, more thoughtful. It's so hard for me on any given day to figure out the best collection I can put out of them, because really there's almost more than one collection out of it, depending on what kind of tiny tale you're into. Because even my taste for nanoism has changed. You would look at stories 1 through 100 and stories 400 through 500, and there's a different sensibility that I've developed over time, and it kind of goes back and forth.
You had mentioned too about nanoism that someone could sit down and basically read the all 500 stories that have been published in just, you know, in probably an hour or two. And I know there are some people who will, like, look at hidden fiction and, you know, even like the anthology. I remember when it first came out, people would say, oh yeah, I went to the bookstore and I paged through it and I read it and that was it. Should stories that short, though, I mean, should they be sped through like that? And I mean, and then I would have people who would say, you know, they took their time. They read one story a day, or they would do, you know, they would do stuff in between reading the stories because they knew that they wanted to really take their time with the stories.
I think the latter is obviously the right approach. I mean, I remember when Joseph Young had that book came out a couple years ago called Easter Rabbit, and it was pretty much, you know, hidden fiction style. Some of them are a little bit longer, but, you know, there's a lot of prose poetry and short stories. And I think all those books, you know, hidden fiction, any of the Twitter fiction books, there was a Twitter wit book that came out that was around like 3 years ago or so. All those books, like, what they really are begging to be it's like a bathroom reader. You know, you sit down like once a day to do your business and you open that book up, you read one story, close the book, let it percolate, you know, let it sink in. Next day, you know, rinse and repeat. Cause if you're going to just churn through it, like it's a chore, then yeah, you're just going to let the words wash over you. But the whole point is that these stories hint at, or are giving you a bigger tale than it took you to read. And so if you just read it and move on, then you're not giving the story fair a shot to do that.
No, because Smith Magazine released a lot of those six-word memoir books. And I remember – I think I have a few of them somewhere. And quite honestly, I don't remember any of the stories.
I hate those. I really do.
Because there's just so – I mean, they pack them in. They was it like over 1,000 stories per book. And I remember reading some – I mean, some of them were pretty good. Like there was one where it was a six-word memoir. I forget what the story said. But it was something where – I don't know. It was just really well done. But again, you know, I kind of forget what it is now. But I find, at least with Hint Fiction, from what I've heard from people, is that, you know, those stories really stick – you know, I'm not all the stories, but, you know, a good number of the stories will stick with readers for a long time. And I think that's because there were fewer in the collection. You know, I could have obviously just jam packed that thing full, but I really wanted to do, you know, I wanted to do quality over quantity. And, yeah, I think, you know, the more time you take with individual story, the more you're kind of going to get back from it. But you know, if you just want to read through the entire thing in 20 minutes, which you certainly can do, you're not going to have the same experience. And unfortunately, each reader is going to be different. You can't put like a little disclaimer on the book saying, you know, take your time.
Right. Yeah. And you also figure that, you know, one of the nice things about it is that there's enough stories in any collection that every reader has their different favorites. It's actually kind of impressive. Like the spread, you know, the stories that I remember I actually did not care for as much in the anthology are some of the favorites that people talk about online. And same thing for Nanoism. The ones that I sometimes like the best don't get the most retweets, the most blog posts about them. It's just, you know, everyone's different. So it's really easy to tell the difference in taste because there's so many around there. When I thought about putting together a collection, I always thought to myself, I didn't want to do more than one story per page because I didn't want to give the impression that any story didn't deserve to have its own page, you know? And put like, I remember Twitter Wit, that book came out a few years ago. It had like 10 tweets per page. It was literally one after another.
Yeah. And that's the same thing when I did Hint Fiction. I was very clear that when we were going to do it with the design of the book, I'm like, you know, I want one story per page, you know, a small pocket sized book, one story per page, because having more than one story on a page. Yeah, you're right. I mean, each story deserves its own page. Having more than one story, it's just, it'll get lost in the mix.
Right, so you can find me and five more authors on page 56. You know,
yeah.
Doesn't feel good, does it?
So right now with Nanoism, you are down to a weekly schedule. And
yeah.
How long do you think you're going to continue with that?
You know, yeah. So this is actually today is the very first day of the weekly move, and part of why I almost didn't realize I needed to do this earlier is that I had such a big backlog of stories, and I finally started slogging through the slush pile, which I love. I mean, it's great. I keep stories around way too long nowadays. I don't respond very quickly. I read a story like five times if it's a close call, or more sometimes. You know, I've read some stories literally dozens of times before making a decision, in fact, which is kind of odd. But you know, I kind of am worried that I'm gonna get to the point pretty soon where, you know, I'm not getting more than one or two pieces a month that I want to publish. Because I'm just going to keep getting more and more kind of picky, I guess. And so the real problem is that Nanoism, the website, I think is fine. If it were once a month, you know, so be it. Or if it were closed, so be it. But I feel like a Twitter stream kind of demands some immediacy. And so like having, you know, one a month would be kind of awkward for like a Twitter fiction site. Like, yeah, you publish about your bowel movements three times a day, but I publish once a month, you know.
I only publish about my bowel movements twice a day.
Twice a day.
Much.
Yeah. Because you're regular, so that's good.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, that is your medical opinion. So what, now you have graduated? I remember when you were telling me about how your training in medical school was just like the show Scrubs.
It is somewhat similar. I would say Scrubs is the most accurate of the medical TV shows.
Are you
much
serious?
More so than like Grey's Anatomy and things like that. Oh yeah, by far.
A lot of like hijinks occur.
Decent amount of hijinks. People who your boss is like kind of shit on you, mock you when you're not around, or when you are around to your face. You know, you get forced to do a lot of kind of menial labor because someone has to do it.
Wow. And then do you like? Do you have like this this long-standing rivalry with like a janitor?
No, that's never happened. Although I think I'm waiting to get like a rivalry with some kind of ancillary staff member. But usually people are actually really nice in general. Usually it's actually the older docs and some of the nurses that that give new doctors and students trouble.
Okay. What else are you working on right now besides Twitter fiction?
I'm working on the exact same novel I've been working on for 4 years off and on. It's been, you know, extremely slow going. I'll drop it for half a year and come back to it. I'm still working on it. I still desperately want to write it.
Well, you know, in our literary culture, the longer it takes to write that novel, the more important it must be.
Right.
So, I mean, to take another 10 years, then there's...
It probably will.
Then, you know, obviously it's going to be great because that seems to be the formula. At least that's how it works for Jonathan Frazin.
That's right. Well, the funny thing is, it's like, you know, the protagonist is a high school senior, which was a little bit closer to what I was back when I first started this, you know, when I was a senior in college as a short story. And, you know, now I'm another 5 years out from that, basically. And, you know, I'm getting to the point where I'm getting a little bit too old. If I don't write this thing soon, I'm going to start, like, being very uncredible as a resource for this character.
All right. Well, do you have a working title?
You know, the working title actually was Characters. Because it is about a high school student with an online role-playing addiction. You know, MMORPG kind of guys. So that's what it was about. That was the one sentence cell, which is not very strong, mind you. But so it was called Characters was the working title.
Kind of like the Guild?
Yeah, pretty much.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with that.
All right. Well, thanks for talking today.
Thanks, man. For having me.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
So you've been really busy. Every few weeks, I feel like something. We actually just bought Two Shot the other day and started reading the first story. So what's next for Robert Swartwood?
The Inner Circle. Hopefully, The Inner Circle is going to be released in the next several weeks.
So you're doing the final polishes and the formatting and whatnot, pretty much?
Yeah.
Nice.
And I was going to do a blog post about this the other day, about how readers are not better readers. But I kind of felt like, what's the point? I don't know. I've kind of like lost my whole thing about, I try to blog all the time, and I don't know. I just kind of got to the point now where it's like, what's the point? But I've seen some writers, they'll publish books, and then based on reader comments, they will change those books. And not like reader comments like, you know, friends or other writers, like people who are buying the books and leaving customer reviews.
Right. And, which is a terrible idea.
Yeah. And there was one writer in particular who, Barnes & Noble has this thing with Nook First, where they get exclusivity for the first 30 days of a book's release. And a pretty well-known self-published writer basically had a book, you know, in the Nook First program and said on his blog, I think, something along the lines of, I'm going to base the comments I get from readers on the Nook edition and make the changes I need to then when I upload it into Kindle. And I'm like, what? So I don't know. So I spend a lot of time to try to make it, you know, as perfect as can be, because, you know, if I publish the book and then someone comes to me later and says, oh, you know, in this chapter there was a typo, like, okay, that's no problem. But I'm not going to say like, oh, you know, this character's motivation doesn't, you know, should be stronger. It's like, I'm not going to be like, oh, okay. And then go back and you know, it's like, no, once it's out, that's it. So, you know, I kind of take a little bit more time doing that. I think I have to come, make better deadlines for myself, because not really having any like, you know, strong deadlines, like, as I would with a regular publisher, you know, that was a nice thing, you know, working with Norton, and, you know, there were deadlines, what had to be done by a certain time.
Exactly.
Here I kind of create deadlines in my head, but I don't necessarily always hold my...
Yeah, I never file my deadlines, which is why my novel isn't done. Yeah, that's why I did Twitter fiction in the first place, because I knew I could start and finish that in a single sitting, at least to a certain extent. Well, this I can do.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, I think it's good for writers to come up with, like, deadlines for themselves, but it's even more important than to really stand by those deadlines. I mean, I could say, okay, I want to finish this by, you know, by this point, but there's no repercussions if I don't. So that is something I need to work on. But all right, Mr. Ben White, thank you so much for being on the program. And folks, I'm going to have links here. You should definitely follow Nanoism and also follow Midnight Stories. And also check out Ben's website. He has a list of a lot of other publications he has. And if you have the Hidden Fiction Anthology, he does have a story in that calling. It's called, what is it called, Ben?
Before Perseus.
Before Perseus. Really great story about works on mythology. So, all right, Ben, thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you.